Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and this is episode 6 of Small Town Podcast. So far, I've been interviewing elected officials in the small towns that I have visited, but I can tell you firsthand, we are not the ones doing all the work. So today we have the opportunity to hear from a local official who is appointed, not elected. He's been in his position for quite some time, almost 40 years, in fact. We're going to go talk to Fire Chief Craig Tully in the small town of Colquitt, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Ocilla, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got 2 traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Ocilla made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Ocilla, Georgia. So we're headed to Colquitt, small town of Colquitt in Miller County in southwest Georgia. That is about a 2-hour drive from Ocilla. We took U.S. Highway 319 from Ocilla to the not-so-small town of Tifton, Georgia. Nice place. Where we got on U.S. 82. From there went to the small town of Sylvester. From there, Georgia Highway 112. Now we are approaching the crossroad in Newton, Georgia, where we're gonna go... Well, you heard her. Georgia 91 all the way to Colquitt. Rolling into Colquitt, Georgia. So far, I've mostly come into a small town, and whoever I'm going to meet and talk to, I meet them at City Hall. Have had to meet someone at their home because the mayor did not have an office. Of course, this is a fire chief, so Chief Tully, I shouldn't be surprised, gave me directions to the fire station. I can already see the murals Colquitt's famous for. We'll have some pictures of those up on social media and on the website. Nice little square downtown. Lots of little shops, offices, a couple little restaurants. We are going to the Emergency Services Building. All right, we're at the Colquitt Miller County Emergency Services Center. Let's go in and talk to Chief Tully. All right, well, now I'm inside. Actually, it was not the emergency services building. It was the fire station. It was right across the parking lot. And so we're in the fire chief's office with Chief Craig Tully. Chief Tully, thanks for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mr. Mayor, welcome to Colquitt. We are honored to have you.
Well, thank you very much. Just to, I guess, give a little background, you know, some folks I talked to I've met before, and I like to tell how. Chief Tully actually was an instructor in a class, a GMA class that I took last summer. On EMS and fire, and a lot of how departments work, because elected officials, we're supposed to know everything as soon as we get sworn in, but that's just not the case. So it's nice to go learn how things are supposed to work and see how things can work better. And so the entire group, I think there were about, between the panelists and the actual instructors, there were 5 different right. people, and they were all incredible and obviously highly respected by each other. But Chief Tully was the only one from what we'll call a small town.
Right.
So I gravitated to him at the break to ask questions, and I've very much appreciated you being able to kind of help me and coach me on some things to try to do things better in my city. So I'm real happy that you were able to join us for the podcast. So.
I'm honored to get to it. It's just good to be able to do it.
Well, let's talk about Colquitt, and let's talk about you. Were you born here?
Born right here. Lived all my life right here in Colquitt.
Right here. So, I think we were walking around earlier before we came in your office set up.
used to live just, I mean, really downtown, just right around the corner from the old theater is what we were talking about.
Well, we had a business. My daddy owned a service station, and it was right down on the corner and right from the theater, and that's where I spent most of my time because it was it opened at 5 o'clock in the morning and closed somewhere between 12 o'clock and 2 o'clock the next morning.
Okay.
So most of my hours were spent right there at that service station.
And you were talking, when we were talking about the theater, you used to go down there and it would, you know, you caught the matinee and then just stayed around for the feature. You say you got to do all that for 50 cents?
50 cents. You could go to the matinee and then you could go, the matinee was around 2, and then 7 or 8 o'clock that night, a feature, whatever the feature films was in the area, they would show it. So I could see the matinee, the feature film, and get a Coke and a bag of popcorn for 50 cents.
Probably can't do that anymore.
I don't think so.
And they're redoing the theater, so that'll be finished, and be having events and maybe some movie showings there. And it looked like it was coming along nicely when we were just inside a little while ago.
It's going to be such a benefit to the city. We're going to have something to help enhance our square, to bring people in. We've had a lot of conferences. We have a lot of conferences here that you wouldn't think that we would have, being a little small town. Not huge conferences, but 50 to 60 people. And this is going to give us a building to do that in. It's going to be something that people can rent for weddings, wedding receptions, whatever events they have. It's going to bring people to Cogwood. It's going to keep people on our square. We're just excited that it's happening.
So going back to you and kind of growing up, grew up here, went right to the, was it County High School, I assume?
Miller County High School.
Okay. What after high school? What'd you do?
Well, you know, I went to college for one quarter to make my mama happy, but I didn't need to go. I was 18. I knew everything. Why did I need to go to college? And so my granny kindly paved the way for me that I was going to take over the family business and run the service station, and that's what I did. I took it over, and I ran the service station up until 2000. I sold it in 2007, and I went to work for the city full-time January the 1st, 2008. Then I realized that I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. So then I went to college. I started college when I was 48, I think.
Okay.
and got a college degree. I realized that I did not know everything like I thought I did.
Now, what did you end up getting a degree in?
Fire science. I had to get to something that I could relate to.
Well, now you were already well in that. So now that's what you did for a living. But I think you've already told me. Now, you how old when you got involved with?
I joined when I was 18. Our fire department was formed, I think it was May of 1978. I was a charter member. Cogwood had tried to have other fire departments in the past, but it just wasn't successful. So our fire department up prior to 1978 was the police department. Whichever police officers were on duty would get the fire truck, and then if it was in the city limits, we just like all the other little towns in Georgia back then, we had a big siren that was on top of the water tower, and you would blow it, and when people would hear it, they would go and help with the fire. And if it was in the county, they didn't blow the siren. People just would see the fire truck go by, and they would go.
They'd follow it.
That's all we had.
Yeah.
We had some pretty significant fires in the 70s here in Cogwood, and our courthouse burned, Piggly Wiggly burned.
Oh, wow.
Methodist Church burned, the school burned. So we decided we needed a fire department. So our police chief, who had been police chief for several years, he was getting ready to retire, and he took that as his personal goal, was to see that a successful volunteer fire department was formed. Mm-hmm. And so he did. I wasn't the chief to start with. I started off as a lieutenant.
Even though you knew everything when you were 18.
I did. Yeah, you should. I did. And if you didn't believe it, you could have just asked me, and I could have. And we just grew from there. So this is our 40th. This is actually our fire department's 40th anniversary, and I've been chief for 37 of them 40 years.
So now in the beginning, how many people joined at the same time? Now, I think you actually said you joined when you were 17, is that right?
18.
18. You 18. Were 18. Okay. 18. So when you were 18, and that was the first group of people with the fire department right. That was formed, how many volunteers were there? How many plank owners are
I think
are
it was
this?
About 18. 12. It was 18, and then we... The number 12 keeps sticking in my mind because I think that's the lowest we've ever been. I think when we got it going, and it's a pretty good, when you build a fire department from scratch,
yeah,
there's a lot that goes on other than just drills and that type of stuff. So we probably dropped membership down to about 12, and then we got it going, and things started picking back up. You're from a small town. You understand what I'm saying. You know, when we were trying to do that, everybody was saying, well, you know, a new broom sweeps good. And so they had fire departments here before, and it hadn't worked. But this time we were determined that it was going to work, and we were willing to do whatever it took to make it work.
Now, just to give everyone a little scope, remind me the population of the city of Colquitt.
Right now, I think it's somewhere around 2,000, 2,200, something of that nature.
And Colquitt's the only incorporated city in Miller County.
Correct.
And so since you're Colquitt-Miller County Fire Department, what's the total population of Miller County?
I think it's around 7,400, maybe.
Okay. All right, somewhere so 2,000 the city, and then total about 7,400, somewhere around that.
Right.
So, so small community.
Very small.
Overall, so the combination of city-county was for efficiency.
Right, right.
But yeah, so 12 volunteers, and it sounds like pretty quickly you were in a leadership position as a fairly young man.
Yeah,
and,
I was.
And did you just, I mean, you've been in this for so long and well-respected statewide. Chief Tully is actually on the Georgia Public Safety Board, so to be recognized at the state level with that kind of responsibility, I think speaks volumes of...
It's a tremendous, tremendous honor. Undeserved. There's no way I would deserve that.
I don't know if I'd say that. But to go 12 people and you rise in the ranks, when did you know that was kind of a... Because, I mean, very clearly, when I first met you and you're instructing that class, you have a passion about fire departments and fire safety, its importance to the community. So was that just always... Is that why you joined in the first place, or did you just join because fire's cool and some people like running into danger?
I think I just always wanted to do that. I mean, it, just a part of me always. You know, most kids like fire trucks and all, and you know, the big red fire truck. Well, we had a white fire truck. That's why we have white fire trucks now. I mean, for some reason in 1965, I remember the day that it come around the square. Nobody knew we were getting a new fire truck, but here it come in. I was 5 years old, and I saw that fire truck, and it was white. So, you know, but that's what we're known for, the department with white fire trucks. But
that's how you set yourself apart, huh?
I don't know. A part of me always wanted to do something in emergency services. At one time, I thought about wanting to go into law enforcement. A friend of ours was a sheriff here at that time, and when I got 18, he let me kind of hang out and work a little bit around the sheriff's office, and I found out that didn't meet what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
During that same time, I was, you know, on the volunteer fire department. We was training, and it didn't take long for me to figure out that was where my calling was. Was the fire side, not law enforcement, the fire side. It was just a fit. I mean, you know, you've done things when you just know you fit.
Mm-hmm.
So for 30-something years, I volunteered and ran a service station. And I guess in 2008, my dream come true, you know, to get to be a career, to get paid for doing something that I loved so much.
Well, talk about, you know, kind of going back the timeline here, just a few years in, you actually became as a volunteer, the chief of the whole department. I mean, obviously you had to go do some classes up in Forsyth and things like that. So describe the extra responsibilities involved that. Of course, all the while you're doing that for no paycheck.
When we did that then, we were a small department. We had one truck.
Mm-hmm.
Our fire station was in an old service station.
Not yours though, right?
No, not the one. The one across the street.
I was wondering if your service station doubled as the fire
department. No, it was the one across the street, the old service station across the street on the square. And we were challenged to, we didn't have any money. The city and the county couldn't give us any money. They didn't have any money.
Yeah.
So we spent more time raising money than we did doing anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we...
just for the equipment.
Yeah. Just to get the basics, you know, of what we had to have.
So were some of the fundraisers you did?
We did everything, but everything honest we do. We did anything from shucking oysters to chopping wood. We washed cars on the square during softball season. People would come in from the ball games, and we would stop them and wash their cars and tell them if we didn't wash the outside in 2 minutes, they didn't owe us anything, and they'd give us donations. Yeah, and we wrestling. We hosted several wrestling matches here and made a lot of money. We teamed up with the Armstrong family, Bullet Armstrong, Bullet Bob, and his guys. They come and they helped a lot. And then I think our most successful steady fundraisers that we did was we had chicken queues. We'd ask for forgiveness, and we would have them on Sunday mornings. And we would have the chicken ready. When people got out of church, all they had to do was drive by the fire station. They didn't even have to get out. We would be having
right
it
right in
there,
the window.
Giving it to
drive through service.
So we did a little of it all. That actually played into our success, because I think it showed the business community here how serious we were about what we were doing. And they eventually come up and said, enough is enough. And so then we didn't have to have fundraisers anymore.
So now you tell me, now you are funded, both the city and the county.
We are funded by the city and the county.
Now you're still a 100% volunteer.
Right.
Nobody in Colquitt-Miller County that works with the fire department is paid a salary for doing
paid 1 cent.
Including you.
Including me.
So tell me about your, because now you do have, you were the paid fire chief.
I was.
How did that evolve into your current position?
Well, when I was 19 years old, my daddy talked me into joining the Georgia Firefighters Pension Fund, which was the smartest thing I ever done. And so I started paying in $5 a month for a retirement. And that retirement, over the years, it's went up. It's at $25 a month now. But that retirement is, you can't beat it. When you reach 55 and you have 25 years of service, then you're eligible for retirement. The retirement, I think the basic retirement now is about $800, $800-something a month. And there's different ways that you can set it up. You can set it up where you get all of it every month, or you can get a smaller amount, and then your spouse will get that same amount at your death if they outlive you until their death. So when I turned 55, I was to the point to where it wasn't going to go up anymore. So I retired from the fire department, from getting paid.
As the paid fireman.
Right.
Yeah.
And I went back to...
I was going to say, we're still sitting in the fire chief's office.
I went back to volunteering, and I talked to the pension fund, and I said, listen, I'm going to retire, but my office is at the fire station, and obviously I do a lot more things for the city than just the fire department, but I said, is that okay? And they said, it's fine, as long as you don't get compensated to be the fire chief, you can retire. And so that's what I did. I went back to volunteering. I get paid to manage and do the other things that I do, but I don't get anything for the fire service. Just I get the retirement.
Which you'd get either way.
Either way, right. Yeah. The only requirement there is you can't get the retirement and then being compensated to be a firefighter. You can't do both, but you can continue to volunteer.
So at that point, you did continue to work for the city as you do.
Right, I still work for the city.
So what are your job description or your title now?
It
kind of goes all over the place.
Yeah, I've been called a lot of stuff. I don't know exactly. I think my official title is Director of Operations, maybe. I manage all the public works. I manage all the utilities. I manage water, wastewater, pretty much everything in the city. I manage that for my city manager. And we saw a need to have to, we needed to come in and do some things, set policies in place. We needed to update infrastructure that was, put in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And just, we needed to develop a master plan.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough that through my training in fire and all the things that I've been able to do, I've learned a lot in about strategic planning, how to put them into place, how to follow them, how to come out and actually put a plan together and make it work. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we wanted to do. And that's kind of how I evolved into the job I have now, which, I don't even think I come to work. I love it so much. I don't even think I come to work. And I got a good crew, good people who make it work. Obviously, I don't know a lot about public works. Now, if you want to talk about fire, I can talk about fire, but I'm still learning. But I know the secret. I just put people around me that's smarter than I am. And they
go out and do it.
And I let them do their job.
Yeah.
And they do.
Well, before we kind of shift the conversation to talking about Colquitt and some of the things you and I have already discussed about your town, let me just ask you I've got some get-to-know-you questions.
Okay.
For those that don't know Chief Craig Tully, maybe some that do but would like to know more, I've got a couple questions for you.
Sure.
So do you now or have you ever had a nickname? I know you get called Chief a lot, but that's
Chief,
more of a title.
Chief, that's not a nickname. No, I don't think I really have. I've been called a lot of things before, but I had one.
Those don't count as nicknames.
Yeah, right. I had one that it was kind of ironic. Me and a couple of more guys coached our daughter's softball team from the time they were old enough to pick up a bat until they graduated from high school, and we became a family. That group of girls, there was about 10 or 12 of them that stayed together and played forever.
Yeah.
And they nicknamed me Shorty. And so that's what they called me. They called, because all of them had nicknames. We all had nicknames.
So
they
the
gave
dads
me
had
Shorty.
To have nicknames.
Come to find out, that's what people used to call my granddaddy.
Oh, really?
Was Shorty. So, but I guess that's the only real nickname I've ever had. The closest thing I've ever had to a brother is a guy by the name of Charlie Kyles, and he nicknamed me way back yonder Philco. Now, I don't know why he named me Philco, but As far as a nickname that stuck, no, I never really had one.
So Shorty, Philco, but mostly Chief.
Chief, that's what they call me now, yeah.
So if you had to, maybe to defend the honor of your fair city of Colquitt, had to sing a karaoke song, what would be your go-to karaoke song?
I don't know. Let me think about that. I might have to come back to that. Yeah, I'm the kind of guy, I'll talk and something will go in the back of my head, and I'll come back and say, here's that song you wanted to know.
That's all right. We can edit out the pauses.
That's a good question.
You mean move on and come back to that one?
Yeah, let's come back. Let me think on that.
This episode of Small Town Podcast is sponsored in part by Still Waters Engineering. It takes a lot to provide the services that a city does provide, especially in small towns. There's a lot we don't notice or even see. Cities provide water and sewer services and are responsible for maintaining road systems and improvement projects for drainage, among other things. All to provide the foundation for a better community for residents to enjoy. Stillwaters Engineering has worked on many of these types of projects in the city of Colquitt and other small towns like Osceola. In Colquitt, they've done transportation projects to ensure safe routes for children to get to school. Stillwaters worked to help Colquitt get a grant to improve the Miller County Hospital, creating more jobs in the community to support health care in a rural area. They helped support a growing industry by putting in a rail spur so products can be brought in by rail. And over the last several years, Stillwaters Engineering has developed projects to improve pump stations and sewer mains and were essential in Colquitt receiving grant funds to complete these costly projects. There's a lot that we take for granted when we drive through our small towns, when we turn on our faucets, and yes, when we flush our toilets. If your city needs help with infrastructure maintenance or improvement projects, whether you live in a small town or a big city, then you should call on the engineers at Stillwaters Engineering. You can visit their website at stillwatersenginc.com or call them at 229-496-5700. That's www.stillwatersenginc.com or 229-496-5700.
All right, your favorite meal or favorite dish?
My favorite meal is gotta be hot wings.
Hot wings.
I love hot
just
wings.
Just a big pie.
I love them.
Particular flavor? There's all kinds of varieties there.
I don't want them so hot you can't enjoy them,
but just
I
with
want
some
them hot.
Sauce. Nothing like mustard, honey
nope,
mustard, teriyaki,
hot
sweet and spicy.
Yep. And
hot.
Okay. And give me that, some French fries, some celery and ranch sauce, and I am good to go.
What is it about firemen really liking spicy things?
I don't know, but we do, you know. And but I, if I had to have a favorite meal, I think that's what it would be.
All right, last question. If you could attend any concert of any singer or group, band, whatever, dead or alive, who would it be?
I think any concert that Hillsong United did.
Hillsong United.
Yeah. I'm a big believer in Christianity, and I got an opportunity to see them at Disney on the Nights of Joy, and I got a chance to see them do a worship series. I've been to a lot of concerts, and I've seen a lot of things, but I've never experienced anything like that, because as I watched them, I finally, a light went off in my head that they were not performing to me.
Yeah.
They were performing to somebody way higher than I was, and we just happened to get to be able to share it and understand it.
So, part of the experience.
Yeah, I think that's what I would do.
Right.
I really was, and there's several of those, you know, Casting Crowns. Golly, I love them. And growing up, my favorite, and you might not never, Elvin Bishop was our favorite guy growing up. I've been to him, and I know you, but if I had to pick one, I think I had rather go to maybe a concert with Hillsong United and Casting Crowns together would be unreal. That would be the
just
best.
Just supposed to pick one group. All right. Go-to karaoke song.
You're
singing for the honor of Colquitt.
I think the best song that I could think of for Colquitt would be a Hot Rod Lincoln.
That's the song you'd sing?
I think that's the one I would, because we are that yet undiscovered Hot Rod Lincoln. We're coming. We're going to get there. We're working on it.
All right, well, let's talk more about the city of Colquitt. What would you say sets Colquitt apart from other small towns or towns in general?
You know, I think, and I don't want this to sound the wrong way, but I think we are a small town with big city aspirations. we want to be able, the city wants to be able to provide for our citizens the finest level of fire protection that we can, the finest level of public works. Whatever it is we do, we want to be the best that there is in the business to do it. But the struggle, just like you well know, is funding. You know, it's hard to do.
Yeah, resources get a little stretched.
You know, money, it's hard to do it. But I think that's the thing that, that sets us apart. And the proudest thing that I am about being associated with the city of Colquitt is that our city government and my governmental leaders, they let me do my job. They don't interfere. They don't call with this or that or, you know, we're in a small town. And in Colquitt, let me tell you the secret about Colquitt. The secret about Colquitt, and I think I told you this in the class, the secret in Colquitt, all you got to do is pay your bills because everybody else will take care of your business. There are no secrets. There are no, so everybody knows everything. But when we go to a city council meeting, it is strictly business. Yep. You don't see arguing. You don't see this. We might not agree on everything, but we're to the point in our relationships with one another that we can agree to disagree and still be friends. Another important thing is I think we're friends first and then employees, government, bosses, or whatever later. There's a line. Don't get me wrong. There's a line that, that we don't cross. You've been around my city manager and I, you know, we kind of cut up and care, but there's a line. He's my boss, and I realize that. And I'm going to do everything in my power to do what he wants done to the best of my ability. But he allows me to do my job. But the only way he can allow me to do my job is that the government leaders has got to allow him to do his job.
Right.
That's the way it works. There's a trust amongst us that we have developed to where I trust them to protect me, and they trust me to do their job.
Now, to kind of go back, you're talking about money's tight, resources right. are thin, and that's across rural areas
sure.
because of just the low population density. That's a pretty common problem. But are there some specific instances or struggles that maybe the city has had financially, and what did you do to overcome it? And you've kind of already talked about it. You have, and we're sitting in your fire department. It is not in an old service station anymore. It's its own building. It's a very nice building, and it is well equipped. And you have, you know, four. I think it was four bays, if I counted correctly, coming in. And you know, and this is one of. I think you said there's four other stations besides this. And you've come a long way from doing chicken queues on Sunday morning and washing cars in 2 minutes
right.
after
that's
a softball
right.
game.
Right.
So obviously, that's how in the fire department case how you've kind of overcome that. But are there other situations where money was tight, but you had to overcome something, or you know, I don't know if Colquitt's ever had like a financial crisis or anything like that that's had to be worked through.
Well, when you look at, and let me use the fire department for an example. We have a fire department now. We are so blessed that, like you said, we got four stations. We're building our fifth one now that's in the county. We made a bold move several years ago. And that bold move was I finally recognized that when I went to the city council, I went to the county commissioners, there was no money there. And I understood it because, you know, I knew these people. I grew up knowing these people, and I knew that they wasn't going to tell me something that wasn't true. So a light went my head off that I needed to quit taking it to them. I needed to take it to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did is I took our struggles to the public. I said, here's what we need to do. And we made a very bold move. In 1985, we painted on everything we had when call, we respond. And so that's a big statement for a volunteer department to say that if you call us, we're coming. And so
that's on your trucks. I see it on your it's on your patch, on your
everything
shirt right now.
We do. Yeah. That's our mission statement. It's simple, but it's something that we really take pride in. So we were able to take it to the public and convince the public that we were for real, that we were going to do the job that we said we were going to do. Well, that in turn led to being able to have a splosh tax passed. We kind of led, the fire department led the battle on that. Us along with our sheriff at that time, we went door to door and asked people to vote for that splosh so that we could go and buy the equipment we need. People, I tell this story and people laugh at me. I don't know if they think I'm making it up, but we were so bad at one time that the local record service, we gave them a pager because if we had a fire call, something was going to break down and they would have to pull it. And we knew it.
To the fire.
Yeah. And lift it up and dump the water out of it into a dump tank and then bring it back.
Oh,
and you know, we came from nothing, but I do that same thing now with, I think that what we've got to do in Colquitt to avert these monetary crises, we've got to show the taxpayers that we're trying to give them the best that we can give them, the best service that we can. We can't always do it. And a lot of times we have to go back and do stuff over. Mm-hmm. But I think that when they see that effort, but in Colquitt, to maintain the infrastructure that we have, it is a pretty much a financial burden almost every day we open.
I can't think, not because of the financial burden, but I can't think of a better segue about what you just said about taking to the public and getting the public involved to start talking about swamp gravy.
Swamp gravy.
So I had the chance, Chief Tully actually toured me through the Cotton Hall. It's right across the street from his fire station. So before we set up, we went through where Swamp Gravy is performed every October and then again in March. And they use that theater for a lot of other performances throughout the year. I'd heard about it. I have not seen it. I've now been invited to come see it this year. Tell people who have never heard of Swamp Gravy what it is and how it got started.
Well, Swamp Gravy, actually, Swamp Gravy is
and I should have clarified, if for someone that's never heard of that, they probably think that's something you pour over your mashed potatoes or something like that. It's a performance.
But you're right. It's close to that. Swamp Gravy, the true Swamp Gravy was a stew that you used to make when you went fishing. And I remember as a young boy growing up, we'd go down on the creek and you'd just grab whatever you had, some corn, okra, potatoes, whatever you had, you know, laying around. And you'd take it with you and you'd fry the fish on the creek and you'd put a little bit of fish in there, a little bit of grease and stir it all up and make swamp gravy to eat with your fish. Well, there were some people in Colquitt, some true visionaries who, like me, was tired of seeing Colquitt decline because Colquitt was declining. We were going downhill and we were going downhill fast. We were losing businesses. We couldn't compete with the bigger cities and the box stores and that type of stuff. And so they saw an opportunity to maybe capitalize on something we're good at, which is telling stories and reliving our past and showing our pride that we have in our community. You know, you and I talked earlier about one of the things that Colquitt has going for it, and I think the number one thing we have is the pride we have in our little town in our county. And so they decided to go around and start interviewing these older people that lived in Miller County and right around in the surrounding counties. And they recorded those stories, and then they locked them up in a vault. And then they hired these writers and producers and directors from New York and Chicago. And they came down and they took those stories and that they had written. Some were written, some were recorded, and they made plays out of them. They wrote scripts, and they're true stories. You know, now sometimes there's a little bit of, you know, theatrical stuff added to it to make it a little better. But the story, some of them, every word in the story is true. So it started off, and, hey, I was one of the people in the beginning that said it would never work. I said, this isn't. My wife tried to get me to go to the first one they had. They did it down at the school lunchroom, and I said, I'm not going to fool with that, you know. And so, you know, the Lord has funny ways of working things. One night we had to go over to the location they are now right across the street. Something had happened, and I can't remember what it was. Something had happened in the fire department. So we went over there. I stuck my head in the door. And then I stepped in the door, and within 15 minutes, I was sold on Swamp Gravy. It was the real deal. Now, what Swamp Gravy has done for us, it's unbelievable. You would not believe it. If you come here in a March or in an October, you will see tour buses from all over on our town square parked here, church buses. You'll see tags from, you know, way out. And people come here to see these stories, and because they play on all your emotions you got. There's stories about, there's been stories about families. They even did what the biggest honor this fire department's ever had is that they did a play one season about our fire department. They took our story and made a play of it. That's the highest compliment we have ever been paid. I've watched it. I know what it's done for my family personally. My son worked over there, and he was a member of Swamp Gravy and done it, and he loves it. He still loves it. When he comes home now, he'll come home and hug his mama's neck, and then he goes to Cotton Hall. But that's just the way they are. There's so many children whose lives have been touched and impacted by Swamp Gravy and what it did. And the thing that I can relate to so well was I was one of the people who was saying about Swamp Gravy what people used to say about me in the fire department. And I just didn't have sense enough to realize it. But these people were just like the fire department. They said, you can talk negative about us all you want to, but we know that we can do this. And so it went from a school cafeteria to an old abandoned cotton warehouse with a dirt floor to one of the nicest theaters you saw a while ago that you'll find anywhere.
And obviously a source of pride for the entire town, because I'm looking at Chief Tully's, the seal of the fire department on his shirt that he's wearing right now. And he's got a painting of the same seal up on the wall. And it says, when called, we respond. But then in the middle of that, it says Swamp Gravy. Swamp. So it's everybody's incorporated that into the town.
Now, I'll admit, small towns sometimes have a reputation for having nothing to do. But that is certainly not the case in Colquitt, Georgia. Located in the far southwest corner of Georgia, in the heart of agriculture, Colquitt has made a unique name for itself. Whether it is in the unique shopping, the antique stores, or the delicious dining options that are available, the town is usually bustling with traffic on their downtown square. Colquitt is also home to the nationally recognized folk play, Swamp Gravy. Swamp Gravy is performed twice a year in the months of October and also in March. The compilation of stories of the community is a constant process of gathering oral histories, writing production, and then getting it off the ground through professional playwrights, choreographers, directors, and designers who are working with about 100 volunteer cast members. This unforgettable production is housed in a cotton warehouse that has been turned into a state-of-the-art theater. Something else that makes Colquitt unique are the murals throughout the town. Each mural is based on a story or a series of stories from the community. Colquitt is also home to the Agricultural Icon mural that is located on working silos and is currently the largest mural in the United States. Colquitt is also home to the National Mayhaw Festival each April. The Mayhaw has been celebrated in Colquitt for over 35 years, and its kind of tart, kind of sweet flavor makes some of the best jelly in the world. Colquitt also hosts the Bless Your Art Festival each October with a focus on handmade arts, crafts, and goods from throughout the region. Colquitt's combination of agriculture and the arts make for a unique experience. It is one small town that you should definitely put on your list to visit. You can get more details on the community and all of the activities and experiences that Colquitt has to offer by going to the Colquitt-Miller County Chamber of Commerce website at www.colquitt-georgia.com. That's www.colquitt-georgia.com. Check out their community calendar for various events and happenings, and get more information about the Mural City and the home of Swamp Gravy. Follow the Chamber on Facebook so you'll be reminded about the next festival, play, or other downtown event that's happening in the great small town of Colquitt, Georgia.
Fire departments, my opinion, I'm old-fashioned. And I think a fire department should promote their city that they come from.
Sure.
You know, and so you need, everybody needs something unique. Well, there was nothing in the world any more unique than Swamp Gravy. So we went to Swamp Gravy and asked permission from them if we could use and their logo and put Home of Swamp Gravy, and we've got it on every, just like we got When Call We Respond, it's on Swamp Gravy. And you would be surprised, Mayor.
It's on the trucks?
On the trucks.
Oh, my goodness.
It's everywhere you see. I go places, and I've had an opportunity to do a lot of traveling for the fire department over the years, and people will say, well, what is Swamp Gravy? And then you get to tell them, and then the next thing you know, you see those people come here to see that show. And then you'd be walking numerous malls in the metro Atlanta area, because my wife's got a reserved parking place at most of them. And you'd be walking down the, I'd be up there for a meeting or something, and she would go with me, and I'd drop her off at the mall, and I'd come back and pick her up, and we'd be walking down the mall, and people would come up to you and said, I've seen Swamp Gravy. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. Tell me how it started. Tell me. And then, you know, in some cases, it would be two or three people in one mall stop you to see it.
Yeah.
So it's a big deal.
And how long has it been going on now?
I think this is the 25th year.
25th year.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so.
That's an incredible story.
It is.
And you've talked to me, and we're talking about the tour buses. Now, the theater, I think you said it seats, because of the fire.
I think it's like 297.
That's right, 297. He got as many seats in there as he could. He worked a deal with the fire marshal.
That's right. But it is a safe theater. It's sprinkled. We have personnel there for every performance.
I didn't mean to suggest otherwise.
I just want to throw that out there. We're not bending any rules.
Oh, no. Oh, no, but it, obviously with tour buses coming in, with what it's done for tourism and local commerce, and you mentioned when we were going through there, and I believe it because of us just walking downtown, just, you know, a block away from downtown is where we're sitting right now. and the number of places to eat and places to shop
right.
that I'm sure has been helped considerably by the regular influx of tourists for that over the years. So,
Mayor, when I was growing up, I grew up on that square.
Yeah.
And I remember Saturdays, and I shared this with you, at midnight on Saturday night, the square was wide open because that's when the farmers come to town. And
right.
that's when they had they would come and do what they could do.
Handle
and they
shopping.
Didn't come until after they had gotten off work. And they come, did grocery shopping for a week. They'd get their old trucks or whatever greased and serviced and tires fixed. And that was my memory of growing up in Colquitt. The town square was what it is. And I'm very partial to town squares. And I think that a good, successful town should have, you know, had most of the, a lot of places that have a successful square, usually the town is successful, but to have a successful square, you got to have a calling card. You got to have something to bring people to
right.
that square. Well, we got it. We got the greatest
yeah.
calling card that there is, and that's Swamp Gravy and the Arts Council as a whole, what they do. So now we are, and this is one of the ways that the city, is, I think, is trying to give back. We are making it a priority this year to go back and make our square the focal point. We're doing things on our square. We've got people who their job description and assignment is nothing but the square, to keep it everything working in order, and it's beginning to pay off. It's just small town Georgia.
The other very notable thing, you see it as soon as you drive into town, you guys are known as the Mural City. I think I didn't realize this, but the one that's visible from the fire station here, you said that's the largest...
largest mural. It was in the world. I don't think anybody has topped it. If they have, I haven't heard about it.
Yeah.
But it was the largest mural in the world. As a matter of fact, at the completion of that mural, we hosted the World Mural Conference. People from countries all over the world came here, had a big dedication, and they actually had their conference here. It was just a tremendous honor for our little city
yeah.
to have people. And, you know, you're walking down the street and all these people talking in different languages. And,
so
you know,
Colquitt, Georgia, international destination.
There you go. Next thing we're going to have to do is build an airport, you know.
Well, tell me how that got started. Do you even know the number? I mean, they're all over the place. There's one on the side of this building right here that we talked about walking up.
You know, I don't know the number. I should. I apologize. There's quite a few. As a matter of fact, one of the things that you can do is the Arts Council, which is part of Swamp Gravy, which they offer a mural tour.
Oh, wow.
And so each mural around town has about a story that was done in Swamp Gravy, every one of them. And ours was very unique because our mural was the only mural that was actually being painted while the play was going on. So people were inside watching the play. It was called Nothing But a Wheel because, like I said, when we first started, we didn't have, all we had was a wheel to make it work, and that's why they named it that. So they could go in the play and see the play, and then when they would come back out, the artist was here, and she would give a quick narration of what she was doing, and they would relate it back to a scene that they saw in the play.
Yeah, and it was in process while
in
it was
process,
going on.
Right.
That's really neat. So what's the story about how that started as far as when the mural started?
You know, I don't remember the year. It was from the same visionaries, the Arts Council, the same people.
So around the same time as Swamp Gravy started.
Well, it was a few years after that we actually got started. I think the idea was there. I mean, you know, we've got them around, all around town, several different buildings. And
yeah, I was going to say, I don't know that there's a bare wall visible in Colquitt because everything and the the biggest one you
the
got.
The silos, right.
It's on silos right. and not even a wall. It's pretty amazing.
And what's really unreal about it is I walk out in my parking lot and on a weekly basis, and there's tags from way off, and people have come to take pictures of the mural, and I give them directions to where they are, and then, you know, they just stop in the middle of Main Street out here to see that big one, and it's illuminated at night. You really ought to see it at night. It is unreal at night how beautiful it is.
So I always ask this just because obviously we've talked about some of the real big things going on lately, but is there any person of kind of celebrity status or any historical events, significant events that have happened in Colquitt or at least nearby here in Miller County?
Well, I'm sure you probably heard of the movie The Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah, I saw that.
And that movie didn't tell the whole story.
Okay.
You see, two of our most famous residents of Miller County that were born here, and they were raised here at an early age, and then they moved, but they were born and raised here through their childhood years, were the Anglin brothers, Clarence and John. Well, this guy that when they did the movie, you know, they I think who was it, Clint Eastwood? Yeah. I can't remember that played. He played the other guy. The two poor guys from Miller County, they didn't show them too much in the movie. So, you know, everybody didn't know that bad. Well, you know, we knew. We knew.
You knew the whole story.
The whole story. We did a play about the Anglin brothers.
Okay, so two of the guys that escaped from Alcatraz are from Miller County.
Miller County, right.
And they got mentions in Swamp Gravy.
And they got a mural on the wall. We got a
They're
mural.
They're one of the murals.
Right. We got them. And listen, let me tell you, people say, well, I wonder if they made it. Let me tell you, they made it. They escaped from Alcatraz, and so nobody ever could figure out how.
Right.
So I think it was last year on the History Channel, I think it was, they had their sisters and their nephews, and they interviewed them, and then they had a real close family friend. So the way that they escaped, you know, the movie portrayed that they made, and all that part was true. They took spoons and dug their way out, and they took hair from the barbershop and put it on.
Right, make it look like a dummy.
What do you call it when you make that stuff with the paper?
Paper mache.
Yeah. And done that. And that part mostly was true. But what they did is, they had taken raincoats and they said they made rafts. And those rafts that they were, once they got out of the prison, they were going to paddle across San Francisco Bay. And they said there was no way that they could do that. And, you know, there probably wasn't with the tide and the current.
Right.
But what they didn't know was that ain't how they escaped. See, what they did was when they were boys, and this was all on the History Channel, so I'm not letting away a big family secret,
okay.
But this was all on the History Channel. They learned in Florida how to ski. And the way they did that is they would go to these docks and they would hook a rope around somebody's boat. And when they would take off on that boat, because these folks didn't have a boat, these Anglin boys, they didn't have a boat. They would just pull behind them and they learned how to get up and barefoot ski and do all that kind of stuff. And that's what they did for enjoyment. So they were good at it. So what happened is they come out of the prison, they go in, and they did make out of raincoats, they did make life rafts, but all they did with those life rafts was hang on under the dock until that boat. There was a boat that come out there every night. I think it was every night or every third night. So they waited for that boat to come out there. And so that boat come out there, and when that boat come out there, they had the ropes hooked on it. So when that boat took back across the bay in the pitch black dark, there was the Anglin boys hanging on behind the rope with them. And so they found the inner tubes, you know, miles away down where the current washed it up. So that's where all the police and the search dogs and all that was looking. And the Miller County Anglin brothers just come right on up through downtown, come out through the harbor, got in a car and left. Their friend was with them. He told where they was, that they're alive. They're in a country that they can't be extradited back. So, you know, that's two of our famous people.
So probably not a source of pride what got them into Alcatraz, but the ingenuity they used to get out.
You know what got them in Alcatraz?
I don't.
They robbed a bank in Columbia, Alabama with a water pistol. And the reason they wound up at Alcatraz is every prison they put them in, they escaped from. So they took them to Alcatraz and they said, you won't get out of here. Well, guess what?
And they
did.
The ones that did.
They did. So, you know, Miller County people, we are unique. We can do. We can do.
And, you can get out of a jam.
Yeah. And so it was really interesting to follow this story. We became really, you know, followers and supporters of this story after they did the play in Swamp Gravy. Because, you know, another thing that they're known for, and this was just on Fox News less than a month ago, they had a letter that was written from them, from the Anglin brothers, that did say that they were alive. And I think since then, one of them has passed away. This letter was written in 2013, I think it was, and it just now come back. And then I can't remember which one it was, but one of them now is sick. I think he said he had cancer, but he was alive. But
they were living it up in South America.
Somewhere down that way, they were doing it. We followed that story. The History Channel, it was a two-hour thing that they had on.
Yep.
And their sister was on it, who came here to see the play.
So everybody in Miller County was watching that particular episode on the History
everybody
Channel.
Everybody knew about it, you know. It just goes to show that in a small town, coming up, even in managing a small town, you got to be able to do things that, you know, sometimes you have to kind of get inventive on the way you do stuff.
Yeah.
Like you have to find a way to stretch a dollar to $10, you know.
Yeah.
And so I say, you know, look what they did. That's probably not a good example, but it's the truth.
Claim to fame there.
Yeah, they're two very interesting characters we got. We've got other people that's done things, but I think, again, the thing about I like so much about Colquitt, I'm nobody special. I'm nothing, but I have had opportunities to do other things and live in other communities,
sure.
And I chose not to because I haven't found anywhere that the community is the way it is. I mean, we're kind of like brothers and sisters here. You know, we can fight amongst ourselves, but don't you come in here as an outsider and try to pick a fight because we all going to get on you. And when something happens, when a tragedy happens in this community, there is no way to explain the love, the uplifting that comes from the people here who you don't even know that thought that much of you. I mean, it's just, I've experienced it firsthand. My wife and I were walking last night, and she just made this statement out of the blue. She said, you know what? I think we live in the best place in the world. And I really do. I think Colquitt, Georgia is the best place in the world. And I feel like there's two people in the world. There's the people that live in Colquitt, and there's the people that wish they did. You know, so I just love this city. I love everything it does. I love this county. It's good people here, good, hardworking, honest people. And we don't have anybody that says, hey, look at me, that it's all about me, because it's us. It's not me, because you know this, and anybody else that's in a small town, it takes all of us to pull together to make what we have work. And even though they might get aggravated with us that maybe the city doesn't do something exactly like they want to do, you know what I found most of the time, that when you go to somebody and you explain it to them and say, listen, here's why we didn't do this, and you give them a reasonable answer, you know what? 99% of the time, they understand, and they're willing to work with you. I really think that sets us apart. Other cities might have it. I don't know, but I know what it has here. Now, here's the thing that I'm having to get used to. We're beginning to grow a little bit, and so I don't know everybody that I meet on the sidewalk. I mean, I don't, and so that's new to me, but that's a good thing. It's a very good thing.
I can't think of a better way to leave it than right there. So, okay. Chief Tully, thanks so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
You're welcome. It's been quite an honor. And, you know, this is what it's all about, Mayor. You and I developed a friendship from a class. Neither one of us ever knew one another. I think, let me just say this one thing, if I can. I think the mistake that a lot of small town leaders and people make is sometimes we get so wrapped up in our little world that we don't understand that there's a lot bigger world out there. And I think that as small town leaders, we need to get involved. I mean, I could have just stayed here and been the fire chief in Colquitt and lived in my own little box and never worried about anything else. But I chose to step out of the box. And I found some very wise firefighters, career fire chiefs, who took me under their arms and mentored me and taught me how to not only to be a fire chief, but to be a leader and how to do things and how to maybe have a disagreement and a strong disagreement and go eat lunch together and come back and have that and pick up that disagreement again. And so I chose to step outside of the box, and I can't tell you, just you and I are a product of that. I would have never met you had I not been able and honored to teach a class for GMA, which the fire service opened the doors. And, you know, every day somebody somewhere and I have a conversation about what's going on in their town, about what's going on in my town, and we try to learn from one another. I think that if we all learn, we all got the same problem, some of them bigger, some of them smaller, but everybody hadn't got to invent the wheel. Somebody somewhere has probably dealt with everything we've dealt with before. Let's right. Talk to them.
You're right.
So I've enjoyed it. Thank you for the honor of coming and letting me talk. It's truly been an honor. Thank you.
All right. Thanks again.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of Small Town Podcast. I want to thank Chief Craig Tully for joining me. I also want to thank the Colquitt Miller Chamber of Commerce and Stillwaters Engineering for sponsoring this episode of Small Town Podcast. As always, thanks goes out to the Georgia Municipal Association for being such a huge supporter of this podcast, and especially to Amy Henderson at GMA for being the biggest cheerleader for this project that I could have ever asked for. Thanks, Amy. If you're enjoying this podcast, please help us get the word out. Like Small Town Podcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and share us with friends. Go give us a rating. Leave us a review on iTunes. Share the love of small towns with the world. If you have any feedback or you know of a small town that you think I should go visit, let me know on social media or email me directly at mayormatt@smalltownpodcast.com. I'll talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
We stand adjourned.